time period, but it's a time period where Europe goes from being a backwater that nobody really cares that much about to being the dominant force on the planet. We're going to start with Renaissance, we'll go through Reformation, commerce, science, enlightenment, changes in politics, lots of stuff. Alright, lots of big things, or we're going to talk about lots of big things going on here, and this is just a few of them. Obviously we're going to start with Italy and commerce. That's where this all begins. Trade in the Italian city-states begins to create a new way of life. Okay? You have moneyed interests that aren't tied to land. Remember in feudalism, your wealthy men were lords who had lands and serfs on them. Okay? Now we're going to have merchants and eventually bankers. And we know that from banks you get, there can be loans and compounding not interest. I'm starting to try to use tricky terms with money that I probably shouldn't. It's in Italy then that, you remember when we talked about how going from hunter-gatherers to civilization and you had a surplus of food so you could have specialization? You get something like that here. When you think of the Renaissance, you think of all this art and architecture. One of the things is you're not going to get that explosion of patronage for the arts unless you have a surplus of money. Now, extra money, money that can be traded, okay, in exchange for services and things. So it really starts there, okay? In Italy, you have the formation of this idea of humanism, okay? The man being at the center of intellectual life and scientific inquiry, okay? It's more secular than in previous ages where your focus perhaps was on the condition of your soul and your outlook was towards the heavens. You're going to see this in art. When I have a slide picture to remind you, Michelangelo's David. Well, it's still a continuity in that, we have a figure from the Bible, which is the kind of art that would have done before. But if you look at how it's not sculpted to be a depiction of King David, or the boy David before he kills Goliath. It's meant to be a depiction of the ideal man, his physical form and figure. Okay, it's a celebration of people. You remember, the rise of ego. Yeah.
Just like the Greeks, you mean?
Just like the Greeks, and that's where we have Renaissance, a rebirth. We're bringing back Greek and Roman ideals. Ad fontes. That's Latin. It means to the fountainhead, to the source. Okay, and so that's why even though you have guys like in your groups and you read the Petrarch and he's looking toward posterity, toward the future. He's having a dialogue with the past, talking, writing letters to Cicero and so forth. You have Luther urging new translations from the Bible, but not from the Latin, from the ancient Greek. And returning to read these things in their original language. Oh, hence Protestantism is a big thing. Okay? In many ways, your Protestant leaders will argue that it is a return to the original source, to the classical era of Christianity as it was when Jesus lived, or the years shortly after, after his death, before this big, powerful church developed and became corrupt and fell in love with money. And in Luther's writings, he talked about how the Pope thought he was some kind of special prince and making emperors kiss his feet and things like that, which are not biblical, or things like priests can't be married, which is not a biblical there's nothing biblical to prove that, to support that. Another big thing, and this isn't the only big thing of course, but the rise of nation states, okay? The consolidation of kingdoms into giant nation states like France, where they are a French nation of French-speaking people. They share cultural traits because they're very snooty. See, now that's recording, and you're going to show that to Blaine, and she's going to get mad at me. Now, similar religion. French tended to be Catholic then, yes, under one king. Now, you get different kinds of governments under these nation states, though. Obviously, I mean, clearly there's an English nation state emerging, but they end up with a limited parliamentary government, whereas France and Prussia end up with absolutist models, and we'll get to that. Yeah.
So you're saying that France, like, formed from giant kingdoms just coming together?
And small ones. Well, if you go way, way back to when Rome fell, in the feudal age, and initially there was, you remember you had periods where there was something big there, like under Charlemagne, okay? But there wasn't one single ruler or government that could lay claim to all the lands. At best, a powerful king still had to share power with his nobles, okay? The borders for France were pretty decently established early on because of the Pyrenees to the south with Spain, and where they share with Germany? I'm not sure.
But the
Ardennes forest and so forth, yeah.
So their land was basically drawn out already, and there was a bunch of kings.
It's just a matter of consolidating power and drawing lines on maps that everybody respects.
They eventually just strung them all together, and they called it France.
It's more complicated than that, but anyway. One of your small group discussion topics was to contrast or compare the Italian Renaissance and Northern Renaissance. Timing is the first issue. The Italian one starts first, as I said, because of commerce there. They had different themes, foci. While both were interested in religion, and both were interested in the classics, Italy celebrated the classics more, and quite sensibly. It was Italians who could walk out of their homes into their towns and see great ruins. They could see the Colosseum in Rome. And they knew that once, upon their very soil, a great civilization existed. So, as the commerce created a new environment and people started having more money and people looked into scholarship and their interest went to try to rediscover their great past.